The impeachment inquiry into President Trump enters a new phase. Good morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for being with us. And just ahead, a conversation with North Florida Congressman Al Lawson about the Democrats' impeachment push. Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. It's 549-2937. We are experiencing technical difficulties right now on 89.9 FM. Listen to us live at wjct.org/listen. All right. Efforts by the U.S. House of Representatives to investigate the president are currently running into a wall of obstruction. This week, the White House sent a letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi stating the president will refuse to participate in an impeachment inquiry. This into allegations Trump tried to trade congressional funding to Ukraine in exchange for dirt on a political rival. So what are the next moves here? Some members of Congress are home in their districts right now. That includes Democrat Al Lawson, who represents Florida's 5th District here in our area and in Tallahassee. He joins us now in studio with more about the impeachment inquiry. Congressman Al Lawson, good to see you. Good morning.
It's good to be here with you this morning.
And we're already getting calls for the congressman. What are your thoughts about the impeachment inquiry? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa N. Jacks. And our Facebook page is open as well. All right, Al Lawson, you were here a few weeks ago in August, and at that point you had not made a decision whether to weigh in on the support of impeaching the president. Shortly thereafter, you did. You joined the majority of your colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle saying the president needs to be impeached. Since then, a lot has happened. A majority of Americans now, just over 50%, say they support impeachment. And so, first off, I guess I want to ask you, how do you see this process playing out as the inquiry moves ahead?
Well, I think that we have no choice. Anytime you have the majority of Americans, people who are saying over 51% that they would like to move forward, and that's literally what we are there for. We are not there for ourselves. We are there for the American people, and that's sometimes people forget. And even though I know this politically and parties are at odds with each other, the atmosphere in Washington is very toxic right now. And so as a result, I wanted to hear from my constituents about how to move on this particular issue. And boy, I was flooded with calls all over the place. Some are probably not in the district. But the way I see it playing out, really the president and some of the lawyers that they have saying what the Constitution provided, absolutely incorrect. I mean, the House really doesn't have to have all these hearings, but I think what the House is doing is giving the people and everybody opportunity to speak out. And so as a result, with the whistleblower and the president himself condemning himself, you know, we have no choice because the Constitution speaks against what he's doing.
There's now more than one whistleblower speaking to investigators. At the same time, the president is taking a lot of bipartisan criticism for his actions in Syria, withdrawing support for a beleaguered minority there, the Kurds. This seems to also be driving disapproval towards the president. It's not related to impeachment, but what are your reactions to that latest development?
Oh, this was a very bad decision. All of the generals and everyone involved have been following these issues for years. I realized that that was a very wrong decision. And I don't know who is advising the president, but you can see what's happened as of yesterday. The Turks are moving in. You know, it's going to Russia and all of them are looking at that we'll pull out of this agreement. And so as a result, over 100 and some people have already been killed, and there are marches to the border today over there. And so as a result, I mean, it's going to be a human catastrophe. What is happening there. It's just something that I don't know why he made that decision. And then people in the Republican Party, all the leaders, you know, are condemning the decision that he made. I mean, this is bad for where the U.S. stands in the world in terms of being more humanitarian towards people who can't protect themselves.
We are getting tweets about the Kurds. Here's one for you from Travis. In light of the president's recent action to enable Turkey to begin the slaughter of our Kurdish allies, What actions are members of the House like yourself taking to protect the Kurds?
Well, you know, the president called the shots in that executive branch. But when we get back next week, we're going to have to try to condemn it and take additional action because this is just impossible. I think this is one time that you can bring Democrats and Republicans together because the action that was taken is not very good. So I can't tell you specifically what is going to take place. It just happened so quickly and it was escalated yesterday.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with Congressman Al Lawson. Okay, you know, your counterpart in this area, Republican Congressman John Rutherford, spoke to WJCT this week about the impeachment push. Not surprisingly, he has a different take. Here's Representative Rutherford.
I think the process that Speaker Pelosi is using right now is very misguided. If she wants to have an impeachment inquiry, then she needs to bring it to a vote so that all the members of Congress, including those in her own party, can actually have input into whether there's an impeachment proceeding.
What about that argument made by your colleague, John Rutherford?
I love John, but John is absolutely incorrect. And I think that it's good to have the hearings and stuff that that were going on right now in Washington to give the American people the opportunity to make their own decision. And so as a result, that's what we need to do in Congress. Sometimes you can get so caught up, you know, in party politics until you forget about the people input. And so I would say to John, get a chance to talk to him pretty soon and maybe today and to let him know that is the position that many of the Republican members are taking. And it's kind of unusual because you're supposed to be more in terms of protecting the Constitution and what our forefathers left for us under Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution. And so as a result, I think Nancy is doing what is appropriate. She has no choice if she believes in America and protection of the Constitution.
And what's the procedure then for the House Speaker and your colleagues, given that the White House is declaring they will not cooperate with this impeachment inquiry and they continue to defy subpoenas? Witnesses are refusing to show up to testify. So where does it go from here, given that?
Well, you certainly hope it doesn't go to the courts for them to make a decision. And this is one of the things that's wrong with Washington is, you know, if the truth is going to come out, it should. And as a result, that does not understand that we don't have to go through these procedures and all these hearings in order to make a decision. There's enough votes in the House right now to start the impeachment procedure. And so as a result, they've been very cautious in trying to be very smart on this issue. To make sure that the American public understand what you're doing. And now, in the latest Fox News poll, when 51% of the people say we want to move forward, that should send a message down. You know, Fox has always been pretty close to the president. And so as a result, now it's a different story. So I think when many of my colleagues are saying we're not letting people testify and so forth, and the president stated yesterday that we need other hearings and so forth. We really don't. I mean, the president really initiated all of this by going to a foreign government to ask them for dirt on an American who is running for the United States presidency and his son.
You're talking about Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden, and Hunter Biden's seat on a board of a Ukrainian company. So you don't believe that was improper, Hunter Biden sitting on that board while former Vice President Biden was at the same time calling for a reform of corruption in Ukraine? You know, it's been criticized. It's not illegal. And certainly, as you've pointed out, it's against the law for the president to extort a foreign country for negative information on a domestic political rival.
That is correct. Let me tell you the reason why I don't believe it's illegal. In the 28 years that I served in the Florida legislature, 18 years in the House, 10 years in the Senate, oftentimes, you know, just because you're a politician doesn't mean that your siblings, your relatives can't operate in other areas of government or with business. And so as a result, it's not unusual for me. It might seem unusual to other people, but that doesn't really stop your family from having jobs in government and so forth. It's just that you have to make sure if an issue come up that involved them that you cannot vote on it. You know, and then what? The vice president is not elected. The president is elected in America. And so as a result, you know, you can't control everything that they are doing. It's just like Pence right now, who is the vice president. You know, he's not elected. And so you hope that the president will help bring this country together, people together for the good of all.
Let's go to a few tweets now for Congressman Al Lawson. People following this process closely. Here's one for you, Congressman. Does Congress have a plan to deal with the current obstruction of justice being employed by the White House? And will anyone actually be arrested for not showing up for a subpoena?
Hey, that's a very good question. And that's one that I'm not able to answer at this particular time. I'm not in Washington today, and I know they are meeting. I will find out later on today before I get back, you know, just what steps they are going to take. I'm sure, you know, it's a lot of smart lawyers up there in the White House and even in Congress, and they're going to collaborate with each other. It's a bad mistake what they're doing at this particular point. Who wouldn't want the truth to come out, you know? And if it, the way it stands, you know, and other impeachments, we're going through the same procedure that they went through with the impeachment of Nixon, who would then bail out, and President Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that it's worth going forward, even though it's not likely the Senate would convict President Trump and thereby remove him from office?
I don't think we have a choice because of the violation of the Constitution. And I would think that the Senate leaders will say that when you read the Constitution, what our forefathers left for, they meant it to happen this way. And so we are following procedures that were left for us to do. Even if the Senate doesn't take it up, you know, then that'll be ISO on the Senate, you know, but they're going to have to go through these hearings in the Senate. You know, many constituents call and they think if you go through the impeachment procedure, they think, oh, he's gone. But it's a long process and it just doesn't happen just mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, it could be months, you know, it could be way into the election before a lot of this take place.
Here's a tweet from Frank. Congressman, do you feel conflicted about the impeachment inquiry given your close relationship to the local Republican Party and Mayor Curry?
Well, you know, it's good to have friends on both sides of the aisle, you know, in order to get something done. Florida has been led by Republicans for over 20 years. And so, you know, hopefully that the people who are leading Florida, who are Republicans, you're working in the best interest of the people in the state of Florida. And so as a result, you know, I've never had any problem in working on the other side of the aisle with colleagues. Sometimes we feel different about issues. So I don't see much of a conflict at all. You know, after all, the people who elect me in this fifth district are Democrats. And so, but I still represent everybody.
You're here in your district right now. It stretches from Jacksonville west to Tallahassee. And I got to ask you, and I'm wondering about this on behalf of all of your colleagues, both Democrats and Republicans. There are a lot of issues you're trying to work on in Congress, I would assume. This impeachment matter, though, is dominating everything. Is that frustrating? What else are you trying to get the message out about?
Well, Melissa, you're absolutely correct. It is dominating everything in Washington. You know, when I was speaking to retired union workers yesterday here in Jacksonville, they had the same kind of concern. What is going to happen with prescription drug costs? You know, are y'all doing anything about minimum wage increases? You know, what about affordable health care? You know, all of those issues are extremely important. And so as a result, you have to be honest with the people. This issue is dominating so much in Washington right now until you want to bring it to some kind of closure so that you can start working on it. I've been working a great deal with student loan problem, you know, that they have trying, you know, parents, everybody have problem with student loans, high interest rate, foreclosures and everything else that you have. But people will tell you that we're going to move forward, but it's hard to move forward with the things that are going on with the impeachment hearings right now.
Right. So we do have tweets for you, though, about other matters. Here's one from Jim. Does Rep. Lawson have an opinion on the Consumers First Act? What does this act seek to accomplish, and what would be the impact of the act on the average consumer?
Well, you know, consumers are very important because they drive the economy in this country. We have to make sure that we continue to alleviate a lot of the burdens that has happened with consumers. So the Consumer First Act become extremely important, you know, because mm-hmm. It's the basis of what we all about.
What else is top of mind for you, for the constituents in your district? And it's an oddly shaped district. We've talked about that before. Jacksonville's a really different city than Tallahassee in many respects. So the needs here, the priorities here are a little different than further west. But when you talk to people in the district, particularly here in Jacksonville, what do you see as the most important issue you're working on here in this area?
Well, the most important issue that, and I'm just saying to Melissa, this is really stretches all the way to the Chattahoochee River, which is in Gaston County, a whole different. I think I've had the unique ability to represent a lot of rural areas as well as represent the urban areas. I have two urban areas, which is in Tallahassee, in Jacksonville, and they are different. In Jacksonville, I'm always concerned about infrastructure. You know, we haven't done anything on infrastructure, and infrastructure is very important in the Jacksonville flooding and so forth. You know, filing a bill to get $135 million to Jacksonville area to alleviate some of the flooding when hurricanes and stuff come. You know, I'm in the Hyatt this morning. I remember it closed down for months, you know, because of the flooding in this area. So mm-hmm. infrastructure is very important to Jacksonville. Funding for the port is extremely important because it's a major port area. And also, you know, it's still working to try to get a veteran hospital here
in Jackson. What's the latest on that, by the way?
Well, right now it's on hold. But
it's on hold.
But
why is that?
All the things that are going on, people are looking at it. Then you have some other areas that is concerned, let's say Alachua in some places, why you want to a veteran hospital there. Well, we want it here because Jacksonville had the largest number of veterans in the state, mm-hmm. you know, and they should not have to travel for their health care. And so it should be right here. And I think we're going to continue to really push it because it's extremely important. When you've been through a situation, my father was a disabled veteran. I spent so much time in Gainesville and Lake City, you know, travel with veterans who have health problems and stuff is critical. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just continue to work on it. We're going to continue to push it and try to make it happen.
Is the hold on it through the VA and DC? What needs to be done to get things moving?
Well, you know, we have to continue to convince the VA that this is necessary for them to do it. My colleagues around the country realize the fact that we have the largest concentration of veterans here. Just like Congressman Rutherford and I, are trying to set up a museum here for those victims who are never accounted for, you know, and mm-hmm. and prisoner war, mm-hmm. Ones that never return because the large concentration of them just here in Florida.
How much would it cost to put a VA hospital in Jacksonville, and where would you want it sited?
Well, siting would be an issue, but we want to try to see if you can site it in a major medical area.
Maybe near UF Health?
Yeah, okay. I mean, it would be very good so that they could actually be there. They're still talking about the price tag of actually doing it, you know, but a lot of people come here for health care, you know, because of the Mayo Clinic. And so as a result, this is ideal. And so it can be very helpful. And so, you know, it's an issue that... been in the back of my mind, and I've told the veteran we're going to continue to work on it, and so we want to make sure that we can make it happen.
Let's get back to the impeachment inquiry, because we're continuing to get tweets for you on that. Here's one from Eddie. Please pass along from this registered Republican my firm belief that the U.S. is in a constitutional crisis. The current resident in the White House needs to be investigated, impeached, and if justice serves, removed like a tumor. So, although it's not surprising to hear Democrats beseeching you as their representative to move forward with impeachment, some Republicans are as well. The support for impeachment of President Trump is ticking up a little bit among Republicans. You have a reputation, as you mentioned a minute ago, as a moderate Democrat who's long worked with Republicans. Are you hearing from Republicans about this in addition to Democrats?
Yes, I hear from a Republican, and I also hear from my Republican colleagues. A lot of time we are traveling together when we get in Atlanta. And you get a chance to break bread and talk to them, and they will tell you that they really don't like what's going on. And the gentleman is absolutely correct, but it is a constitutional crisis. There was no other way to explain it. And so as a result, is what you try to do when you experience a constitutional crisis is return to the Constitution and see what the forefathers outlined for us for over 400 years. And so, and that's what we are trying to do. Now, as Democrats, you know, we're not immune simply due to the fact that the president is causing all these problems, you know. But what you have to do is do what's best for the American people, because these jobs serving, you got to want to serve, because these jobs does not belong to us. Sometimes members who have been in Congress for a long time might feel a little bit different. But these jobs belong to the American people. They're the ones that sent us there. They're the ones that pay us to be there. And they want us to do a good job for them, whether they're Democrats or Republican. And that's what I've always been able to do. I don't say I can't see you. I mean, if Republican call all the time, I might spend more time with them than I do with Democrats, because it is about the quality of life that we need to establish in America for everybody.
Well, it's always good to have you on the show, and we thank you for your time. Congressman Al Lawson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Very happy to be here, Melissa.
And up next, it's a day of action for employees of the Florida Times Union. We'll explain in a moment.
Experience performers live from the WJCT soundstage. WJCT and the Florida Theater offer a unique and intimate setting to enjoy the sight, sounds, and energy in close proximity to musicians and performers.
And I can tell you exactly how I got 14 counts, which is I had 16 and two died.
Join us live from the WJCT soundstage for upcoming performances by Mindy Abair and the Bone Shakers, comedian Paula Poundstone, and Jesse Cook. For dates and more information, visit floridatheater.com.
Well, ahoy there. I'm Chris Thiele, host of Live From Here. Tune in for our broadcast this week from the Town Hall in New York City. We're joined by some very special guests indeed. Trey Anastasio, the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra with Mr. Wynton Marsalis. Sarah Jarosz is in town. Dulce Sloan as well. And our Out in America correspondent, Tom Papa. Come spend some time with us.
Saturday evening at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
This week, the White House sent a letter to the House of Representatives saying they would never cooperate with the impeachment inquiry because it just wasn't fair. Scholars say it's the first ever presidential legal statement written on a weather map with a Sharpie. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us along with special guest Regina King on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Saturday morning at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, employees with the Florida Times Union are holding a day of action today during the lunch hour. This comes on the heels of an announcement that the TU's parent company, Gatehouse Media, is merging with another media giant, Gannett. Reporters David Bauerlein and Andrew Pantazzi are here now with more. Hey, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Andrew, let's start with you. The journalists at the TU unionized. They're part of News Guild, CWA, and you're taking part in a campaign called Preserve Our Local News. What's the message? What will we be seeing today?
So we're going to stand outside our new building downtown, which is the Wells Fargo building on One Independent Drive. And we're going to be handing out some flyers to tell people some steps they can take to show support for us. And just to give people some background about why David and I are here and why this is an issue so close to us. I'm a Jacksonville native. I've been at the TU now for almost 7 years. 2 years ago, we were purchased by Gatehouse, which is a company owned by a holding company that's managed by a private equity firm that's owned by a multinational conglomerate. And in that 2 years, we've already seen the staff cut from 62 people in our newsroom to 29 people remaining today, including all managers. And that makes it harder. And so we hear when our readers are telling us that the newspaper is getting thinner. We're not able to cover as much daily things. We hear that and we see that. And that's really a direct result of an ownership that has decided to not invest in the paper. And meanwhile, they've used us as a case study to shareholders because Gatehouse, the parent company, New Media, is trying to purchase Gannett. New Media is the second largest newspaper country in the company in the country, and Gannett is the largest. This will make the largest newspaper company this country's ever seen. And they're promising $300 million in annual cuts immediately that they're going to cut. And we're afraid of what that means. And they used us as an example to shareholders to say, look at how much profit we squeezed out of the Times Union and our sister papers by saying they nearly, I think it was doubled our profit. So we really want the public to know what's happening, why it's happening, and give them some clear steps that they can take to try to wrest back local control of the newspaper.
David Bauerlein, you're a longtime journalist with the TU, and certainly I'm assuming you've heard from longtime readers that they're concerned about the changes with the newspaper. What are you hearing from the public, and what would you like the public to do?
Well, as Andrew said, we think that community journalism affects communities, and we certainly hear it from our readers that they want more. They would like more coverage of a wider range of coverage. They would like deeper coverage. So it matters to people. And as I've said, there's a lot of great journalists in Jacksonville, in print media, in radio media, in television media. We think that print media has some unique attributes in order to be able to dig deeply, to go and tell stories in a longer fashion. And our ability to do that, it's directly affected by how much investment Gatehouse puts into our paper. And it has been declining. There's a lot of industry forces out there, yes, but there's a lot of discretion, too, we think, that our companies can have to put money back into the newsroom. They're going to be bigger. That's not better necessarily. We don't want this to be a mile wide and an inch deep organization because that's going to hurt local communities who really need good, solid, dependable journalism.
Some cities around the country have lost their newspaper of record altogether, like Youngstown, Ohio comes to mind, and some other towns where the changes in ownership and the challenges to the print industry have resulted in cities just not having a newspaper at all. That is terrible for democracy. And having an outlet that is a watchdog on local government, and Andrew, right now more than ever, I think it's important to point out that in Jacksonville, with everything that's going on in this city, from the potential sale of JEA to issues about school funding and a lot of other controversial matters, your role, I think, is now more important than ever. So this really affects everybody who lives in this community.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Again, as I said, I grew up in this community, so I can think of the important coverage the Times Union did during the John Delaney administration and the Better Jacksonville Plan. I can think of the important coverage we did on procurement with John Payton. I can think of the important coverage we did as Alvin Brown came into office and had immediate issues arise in his mayoral administration. And the work that we've been doing throughout the Lenny Curry administration, trying to hold the administration accountable and trying to shed a light for people. The problem is we're doing the best we can. There are stories we know are happening that we just can't do because there's only so many things and we have to prioritize. Right now, we are prioritizing the JEA potential privatization. We are prioritizing the Duval School's maintenance and the potential sales tax that could be coming up. Or is it property tax?
Sales tax.
Sales tax. There we go. We are prioritizing the stories that we know are most important. What you're not seeing in the paper that you used to see, for example, is as much daily courts coverage or as much daily coverage about crimes that are happening. We have Dan Scanlon, who's doing a fantastic job. When I first started, I think we had four people covering police. Now it's just Dan. So we're really trying to do the best we can, but we can't do more unless there's a radical shift in the way that Gatehouse is running its newspapers, which is to say, stop serving only the shareholders, stop serving just the dividends, and see that the community itself is a stakeholder that deserves to be considered in business decisions, not just squeezing out profit. And I think one of the things I would like to see is if Gatehouse is unwilling to change its practices, if it's unwilling to invest in our paper, I'd really like to see a community of Jacksonville civic-minded elites come together and try to rescue us from an owner that's not investing in the future of our newsroom.
It's my understanding those discussions are happening around this town. And in the meantime, there is an online link you want people to go to. You want them to like your Facebook and Twitter accounts. You even are asking them to email the CEO of Gatehouse, Mike Reed. Is that right?
That's yeah.
Right. Yes. And it's a little bit long, but it's the link is http://bit.ly/
yeah.
Preserve.
And we'll put this on
news.
Our website too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/ preserve local news. And that sends you to a form you can fill out. So you can send a personalized email to Mike Reed, who is the CEO of New Media. And again, we just want you to share with him why it matters that he invest in Jacksonville's journalism, why it's good for us to have accountability for our government.
And like their page on Facebook, along with their Twitter feed, it's the Times Union News Guild.
Just Guild. Times Just Union Guild.
Times Union Guild. By the way, this is a campaign happening today across the country at dozens of Gatehouse newspapers across more than a dozen states, correct?
Right. 50,
yeah, you're joining a national campaign.
Right. It's 50 papers, 14 states. So we're going to be out there in different time zones at different times. But we'll be spreading the word and trying to just make our points and get some reaction from the higher-ups.
Look for them today outside the Wells Fargo Tower in downtown Jacksonville during the lunch hour. Stop by and talk with the journalists who cover this community, the Florida Times Union. Reporters Andrew Pantazzi and David Bauerlein are wearing their Times Union Strong T-shirts, too, here in studio. You'll see them out there at lunch. Stop by and chat with them and help them out. So thank you so much for being here, guys. Thanks for all you do for this community.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks much, Melissa.
Great job. Thank you. Well, this month, the Kummer Museum is featuring an exhibit of works from the Women of Vision. For more than 20 years now, local women with visual impairments have been meeting each month to create works of art, short stories, and poetry. Two Women of Vision join us now in studio, Libby Heineken and Sister Elizabeth Fioriti. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. Now, Sister Elizabeth, you've been a part of Women of Vision since its inception, it's my understanding. How did it all get started?
Well, I was working as a counselor at ILAB, Independent Living for Adult Blind, and I met quite a few women who I thought were not ready to be put on the shelf, and I approached them and asked if they would be interested in doing some art and maybe doing some writing exercises. But I had asked around at least one other museum, and finally I got the Cummer Museum to have an interest in what I was doing, you know, blind women doing art.
Right. At first blush, you think, how does that work?
Yeah, right.
But Dr. Heineken, it's working well. How? Tell me about this. How does this play out?
It is working very well. You're right. And I just want to add to Sister Elizabeth's first conversations with the museum. She went on about, you know, these women wanting to write their memoirs and do the artwork. And then after the Cummer agreed to it, her last little statement was, oh, and by the way, we're blind. So the Cummer really jumped on board. And they were one of the first museums nationally, too, that took on an endeavor to work with women who are visually impaired and work in art. So they first started with very tactile things. And so you think, you know, they want to touch and feel. So they did a lot of clay, they did a lot of weaving and just very tactile things. And all of a sudden, one of the women raised their hand and said, when are we going to paint? And so then, you know, a whole different dynamic came into play. And how do you work with visually impaired to paint? So they started using different shapes of containers, like this is your blue paint, the round one's going to be your red paint, and then they put you know, lines of string across the canvas, this is your foreground, this is your, and they're beautiful pieces of artwork. So I think the Cummer has really been instrumental and gone around the nation, you know, to try to encourage other museums to start programs like this. So
yeah, pretty amazing. Sister Elizabeth, what do you get out of Women of Vision? What is the satisfaction for you?
Well, it's not only the thrill of having the experience of doing artwork, working with clay and colors and messing with it, but also the challenge that Libby provides in writing assignments. But above and beyond all that, there's the bonding of women who never would socially or in any other way come together to form any kind of little society of their own. There are only 14 of us, but we are a disparate group of women. And we have learned by sharing our stories to laugh and cry and learn to love each other more.
Sure. Now, it's my understanding that there are some big projects in the works right now for Women of Vision. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. One of the projects is Sister Elizabeth and I are working on is a book for the Women of Vision that will be a lot of photographs of their artwork and interacting with the gardens and touch tours with some of the sculptures, and also an anthology, if you will, of their writing, a lot of their poetry, and it's sort of broken down into different themes, like the gardens, and they do write some funny things, too. It's and then there's some heavier pieces about, you know, having the visual impairment, and so that's one of our projects. The other one was based on a writing assignment about if you look at your life as a quilt, what would your quilt squares say? And so they did this beautiful writing, and it sort of inspired me to go further. And so I work with the art department too, and we created quilt squares, and the women actually sewed little trinkets and things that symbolize things in their life, almost like a still life on each square. Mm-hmm. And so we're working to put that together that would represent almost, I think Sister Elizabeth and I counted over 50 women that have been in this program since its inception. So we're trying to put that together.
You know, there's a really vibrant blind or visually impaired community in this area, Sister Elizabeth. How do you see Women of Vision reflecting that?
Well, I see Women of Vision as filling a gap for women who have vision limitations and who are able to participate through this Cummer that's now been funded by the Cummer Museum. But we also find, even by meeting with other people who are going to be on the program and people who have been on the program, that we all know each other.
You all know each other.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting to note that it's World Blindness Day today. And the great artist Matisse, who went partially blind later in life, did some of his best work in his later years, his critics say. He did cutout art and other kinds of making art. And so the loss of vision didn't slow him down. It's a pretty beautiful metaphor for how anyone can make art.
Exactly. Also, Monet was another one that lost his sight later in life, too. And same thing, his artwork changed, and it was a lot of his better pieces were later in life when he was losing his sight.
Now, in addition to the artwork, you do poetry at Women of Vision. And it's my understanding there's a poem you'd like to read right now. Is that right?
Oh, my. Yes, I'll try to. This is our assignment for this month.
Okay.
It's to write an acrostic poem. So that if you, the title of the poem is Blind, and then if you read the first lines, first letter of each line vertically, they'll spell out blind.
Okay.
So we'll try to do this.
Okay.
Behind these brown and unseeing eyes lies a wild and colorful kaleidoscope of imaginary scenes. Merry-go-round horses floating past, laughing children splashing in rain puddles, nimble dancers on the beach, silent, swarthy fishermen. Don't you envy me?
That's beautiful. And that painted such a vivid picture of your inner life and your inner images, sister. So I really thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Okay, so when people come to the Cummer Museum, Doctor, how can they access this amazing artwork by the Women of Vision? Tell me how. I have not seen it myself when I've been there, so I'm curious to check it out myself, too.
Oh, great. So if someone's coming in the museum, you could ask at the front desk, and usually their exhibitions are to the left, all the way up the hall in an area called Art Connections. And so they have several studios there, different hallways. So it's sort of stretched out over that whole Art Connection. So you have to do a little scavenger hunt to find all of the pieces, but they're in a big space, and usually they have some of their writings beside it. And all of the exhibition this year will be about our past artworks that we've done through the year. And then they take that down and they put another one up each year. So it runs through October and should be very fairly easily to find. And when you look at it, you'll be amazed to think, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Women with visual impairments did this?
Right. So incredible. And what a treat to talk to you both on this World Blindness Day. The Women of Vision at the Cummer Museum creating amazing artwork and written word pieces as well. Dr. Libby Heineken and Sister Elizabeth Fiorite joining us. Thanks, ladies, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
In a moment, more about our WJCT radio reading service for all of our low vision listeners. Plus, on this World Blindness Day, we'll tell you about the Blindfold Bowling Challenge. Yes, that's next.
A1A Solar designs and installs residential and commercial solar electric systems. NABCET certified A1A Solar provides sustainable and financially efficient energy solutions. Learn whether solar is right for you with a 5-question quiz at a1asolar.com.
Flagler College Forum on Government and Public Policy presents John Rother, President and CEO of the National Coalition on Healthcare. Prescription drugs, can we make them affordable? Thursday, October 10th, 7 p.m., Lewis Auditorium. More at flagler.edu/events.
Maybe you start your day with the news on Morning Edition and catch up later with All Things Considered, but the news doesn't wait. Stories evolve during the day in courtrooms, financial markets, on the streets, and at kitchen tables locally, nationally, and all around the world. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Each weekday, check in with Here and Now for the news as it is happening. That's Here and Now from WBUR and NPR News.
Today at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
How much is the trade war hurting China's economy? We go inside a Chinese factory and meet a businessman moving his company's production to Vietnam.
Purely because of the tariffs. It's just got stronger and stronger and stronger. The tariffs now are just about on everything made in China.
We look at the trade war's impact on the ground in China. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
8 million Americans lost their homes in the Great Recession. Who wins when everyone else loses? Reporter Aaron Glantz has been looking at the key players behind the nation's housing crisis. What are they doing now? And who's still paying the price? Home wreckers. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, several of our guests on the show this morning are also listeners to WJCT's reading service for the blind. WJCT's radio reading service has been serving people across this community with low vision since 1993. It's based right here in our studios where volunteers come into a special studio and read the local newspaper, usually the Times Union, every day live on the air. They do this every day from 9 to 11 a.m. And this radio reading service is free. We have hundreds of radios out there in the community serving listeners with low vision. So if you're blind or have a physical limitation that keeps you from reading the newspaper, you can hear this service online by streaming it through a computer or a smartphone. But if you want a special radio to access our radio reading service, just call us here at WJCT. It's free and part of our mission to serve the community. Give us a call at 353-7770 and be part of Radio Reading. It is World Blindness Day, so we're going to keep talking about some cool stuff because right now, I can't wait to share news of the Blindfold Bowling Challenge. Yes, this is an incredible event. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Doug Hansard, Gladys Echevarria Rivera, and Sherry Mollengraft. They're all with the Jacksonville Council of the Blind. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm great, thanks. And thanks for being here. Doug, let's start with you. What the heck is the Blindfold Bowling Challenge?
I am so glad you asked. First of all, I want to say thank you, Melissa, for having us again here this year. And a shout out to all of our listeners here at WJCT and all of our JCB members. The Blind Bowlers Challenge is where we as blind persons get together and we just have fun bowling. There's a little bit of a twist added to this bowling challenge, if you will. Sighted persons, like Ms. Gladys Echevarria there to my left, will be bowling as well, but we will all be on the same playing field. We'll all have what's called a pair of sleep shades on, and it's a blind, sort of like you remember the TV, What's My Line?
Yeah, sure. No one can see the pins when they throw the ball.
No one can see the pin, that's right. So everybody's going to be on equal plane, and we're just having a great full of fun. We've got two of our bowling teams represented today. Sherry's team. What's the name of your team again, Sherry?
My team is the Alley Cat.
Oh, very nice.
And my team is Team Finesse.
Okay, so this gets competitive, Sherry, it sounds like.
Yes, in fact, I have right here the first place trophy. We're going to have first, second, and third place. And we have trophies and medallions. As you can see, the trophy, it's very nice here. And it also has a ball and pen on top so that those of us that can't see can feel it.
Yeah.
And same with the medallions and everything. And, you know, we will have, like I said, first, second, and third place and just have a lot of fun, just be out. And we'll have plenty of volunteers to help those, because those who can see that are wearing the mask, they're going to need the most help because they're not used to walking around without being able to see. So we'll have volunteers.
Oh, yeah.
There'll be a rail for them to hold on to. The gutters will be covered. So we're going to make sure that everybody there is safe and has a really great time.
Our own Michelle Corum, who leads our radio reading service, said she did it and it's hard. Gladys, you know, if you're a sighted person and you go up there blindfolded trying to bowl, you get it, that gives you a window into what it's like for someone with low to no vision, right?
Absolutely. It does. Although Doug said I will be bowling this time, I will not be. There's just so much going on that I've decided not to bowl. But everybody else will be bowling. I will keep an eye on everyone. We do it every month. This is something that we do every month, and it's fun and it's exciting and it's a fundraiser, guys. So come on out and join us and see what we're all about.
Right. This is coming up Saturday at noon at Bowl America. They're at 11141 Beach Boulevard. Come on out for the Blindfold Bowling Challenge and support the Jacksonville Council of the Blind, a vibrant community in this city. And we wanted to talk about it on World Blindness Day. Mm-hmm. And so everybody, I so appreciate you coming in and sharing this with us. Doug, Gladys, and Sherry will be out there bowling. If you're a sighted person, remember, they're going to blindfold you. So get ready and see how well you do. That adds a little bit more of a challenge to it. So I think it'll be a great event. Thank you all so much for coming by.
Melissa, if I may, I would just like to thank those that have backed us throughout the year. Bowl America, Student Transportation of America, they sponsored two teams, Steve and Sharon Burrell, they sponsored a team. And this is just the community coming together. And I just expect so many great things to come out of it. And I want to thank you.
Oh, thank you for that. Again, that's Saturday starting at noon at Bowl America on Beach Boulevard. Have fun, guys.
Thanks. Melissa, don't forget Tuesday.
And we got, I know, I'm sorry, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. Sorry to cut you off. But that is our show. Thanks for listening. On tomorrow's show, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some great music. We'll see you in the morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.